Hello, everybody, and welcome to Geek Actually Tech, Episode 7 for the 24th of March, 2010. And why are we here?
What
is exactly that we do here on a Wednesday night, Josh?
We do tech. We tell everyone else what they should know about tech.
Damn straight.
The important stuff.
Because we know about tech and you don't. No, no, no. We're only joking. All right, what we try and do here is talk a little bit about accessible tech, because tech is taking over the entire world, as we know. And there are a lot of people who are still a little bit befuddled by the whole thing. So we try and decipher some of the news stories around.
Be the medium between the medium. You and the geeks.
Absolutely. There you go. That's the perfect way of putting it. I like that. We might have to start using it as a catch cry. I am David McVeigh, and I kind of started this whole schmozzle 75 episodes ago with Geek Actually, and I am joined in studio by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I am fantastic. It's kind of a close camera, and I'm a little bit scared because Shane should be kind of here.
Yeah,
but he's just not.
We must explain we are a man down.
I don't know where he went.
He's a little bit missing in action at the moment.
A little bit missing in action.
He was supposed to be here, and we actually have no idea where he is at this point.
Yep, still nothing.
Yeah, still nothing. All right, we're waiting for a text. So if you hear a text message go off or a vibration or something, you might know what that is all about. And I was sitting there during the opening credits turning the ringer off of my phone because I realized I hadn't turned it off. Okay, so this episode, along with all of our usual news, we have a continuing discussion that we started last week about what computer is right for you. And this week we're actually going to tackle desktop machines, not quite in as much detail in the sense of brands to buy and stuff, because we're going to approach desktops slightly differently, which is more or less the build-it-yourselves white box machines as opposed to the commercially available brand names and so forth. And we'll have a total chat about that anyway.
Yeah.
But first thing we have to do is, because we always do it previously on Geek Actually Tech, first of all, we have to bring in another guest that we have, which is Denny Markovic from PALGN. Now, Denny, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Hey, Denny, how are you?
Pretty good, thanks.
That's excellent. Now, we said last week that we would actually bring you in via Skype because we were a little confused. And so we thought if there was anybody who could help answer these questions, it would be you. Now, just for those who didn't listen to last week or are a little bit confused about what we're talking about, last week they were talking about the new OpenGL 4.0 standard, which was going to be released, and they were taking aim directly at DirectX 11. Now, for those who don't understand what these are, Denny, can you explain?
Yep, pretty much. DirectX is Microsoft's API, which is... God, I can't remember what API stands for, but that doesn't matter.
It's a unified set of code, basically.
Yeah, like DirectX basically runs all your games and things like that, and it's the cookie cutter kind of thing that Microsoft have with Xbox, PC, and most games in general. While OpenGL is kind of its competing platform, which is actually written under the architecture of the PS3. So in a sense, they're true competitors because they've been going on for like 15 years now.
Right.
Wow.
Well, OpenGL's actually been around longer than the PS3, though, hasn't it? We're going back to the days of the Voodoo cards and stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's been out for a while, man.
So now, what is OpenGL? OpenGL's four claims, the claims that they're putting forward are that they're going to basically be on a level playing field with DirectX 11. Now, just to explain to the listeners, DirectX 11 is a proprietary system. It is actually designed and set down by Microsoft, and OpenGL is open source, so it's a community-based construction, where they're putting it together. Now, are they true? Are they going to compete?
Well, historically, they've always competed. And the differences between DirectX and OpenGL is that DirectX is cluttered. I mean, it sounds bad. It's a good API, but the problem with DirectX is that Microsoft tend to kind of give you all these shaders and rendering pipelines that, you know, you can work with, but it's cookie-cutter stuff. That's why when you look at a game such as, like, Unreal Tournament 3, for example, which runs DirectX 9 with the Unreal Engine 3, it tends to look very, very similar to every other Unreal Engine 3 recreated because they use very similar kind of shading properties and rendering pipelines. Now, when you look at something like ID Tech 3, which was the engine that powered Quake 3, which ran on OpenGL, you notice that you've got Call of Duty 1, Quake 3, Enemy Territory of Wolfenstein, You've got
Wolfenstein itself.
A ton of games, you know, all there that run on that tech, and all of them look quite different because OpenGL allows for a lot of custom shaders and things like that. And this is also why when you look at PS3 games, a lot of them look drastically different. Like, as an example, Uncharted 2 has a completely different look to something like Killzone 2, which is a much grittier, kind of ragged look. So yeah, that's essentially the differences between them, and like with that, I think OpenGL is kind of going to get the upper hand because tessellation that just recently came in with DirectX 11, it's a really powerful thing in that it kind of multiplies by the power of 4 the geometry on your things, which makes it smoother, and more polygons on something means a better looking model, and it also reduces the amount of like power that you need for it. OpenGL seems to be going for this as well, and then you add in the fact that it's an open source development pipeline.
Wow.
And yeah, you've got a lot of potential there.
Well, they're also saying that with the OpenGL4 standard, it's also going to be compatible with the OpenCL format, which is traditionally what Macs are using. And now what this does, for those who are listening, is basically allows the graphics chip to handle a lot of chores that the main processor doesn't have to then handle.
And me and Beardy have been coming to the conclusion that this could have something to do with Valve's latest announcement. I think that there might be a little bit of work towards kind of pushing programs towards that to try and bring Mac out as a gaming platform. What do you reckon, Danny?
Oh, definitely. Like, I mean, ever since kind of like the hints about like, you know, the little portal turret and like the engineer turret from TF2, and I'm a PC, like you knew it was coming to Mac. So, and yeah, like OpenGL, because it's open source and because they're now supporting OpenCL, it's definitely moving on, and you know they're going to be using on Steam. And I know Valve recently announced that they're going to make a lot of their games reprogrammed entirely to work with Mac and to be rendered onto the Macs, you know, efficiently.
Yeah, so one could only assume at this point that the OpenGL4 standard is what's going to be used.
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
So, having your choice, which direction would you go in? This is kind of unfair. This is kind of unfair considering that you just bought this beautiful new DirectX 11 card. But having your choice, because I know the OpenGL4 actually hasn't launched yet. It's coming. They're only up to 3.3, I think, at the moment. So,
yeah. Well, look at it this way. Like, I really like DirectX. I mean, I've worked with DirectX before on like development things that I've done for TAFE and things like that. And it's a fun thing, and it's actually easier to work with, like when compared to OpenGL. But the problem is that it restricts creativity because trying to customize shaders and things like that, it gets complicated. You know, you have to kind of recreate a lot of things and redesign it, and you have to work around Microsoft's kind of cluttered workflow. While with OpenGL, you know, because it's so open source and, you know, there's so much accessibility to it, you know, you can do things and you can create things the way you really, really want them.
Right.
And I mean, yeah, like DirectX, it has its place. If you look at games like Crysis, which have basically pushed the benchmarks so far ahead with the visuals that even 3 years from 2007, there is still not a game out there that actually beats it. You know, like, DirectX is definitely there, and it's there to stay, and it does a good job. But
apparently,
the addition of OpenGL, and then you add in OpenCL, which is basically GPGPU, which is a technology that people are raving about it at, like, GDC and everywhere else, you know.
Yeah.
The potential is absolutely massive, and yeah, I'm definitely siding with OpenGL on that one.
Wow.
Now, I actually thought that the mobile devices like the iPhone and the upcoming iPad actually were carrying OpenCL, and I believe they are going to in the next update. But according to this article I'm reading from, that's actually quoting Kronos, who actually are the developers of it, they're actually saying that they're currently using something called OpenGL-ES. Do you know what this is?
I do know what that is. That's actually the same source that they use to create PS3 games, because that's what they use in the PS3.
And that's what's in the iPhone currently, so interesting.
Wow.
Yeah,
he's just a fountain of knowledge,
that,
this dude, man.
It's fantastic. Dude, you got to come onto the tech show proper one day.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to get him on.
We got to get you in studio and actually have you chat tech with us.
Well, that'll be fun.
Because I think that'd be great. I'm not sure if we've actually shed a whole light on the OpenGL 4 versus DirectX 11 in simple terms. I thought it was very interesting, though, because
it's the great kind of thing that when you guys go and download the podcast, staring at the screen now, you can kind of go over those words in Google. I mean, you'll probably find out a lot of information.
Absolutely, and we'll have a link on the show notes as well to the original CNET article from a week ago that actually sparked all of this in the first place, which I kind of read and I went, wow, this is very interesting. And then, of course, you start going, to the average person, though, are they going to notice any of this? And I guess, theoretically, you don't want them to.
Mm.
Would you say that's correct, Denny?
Oh, sorry, I was just reading the chat. How can I grow sea monkeys properly? It kind of had me thinking.
Well, I was losing the chat. We're sitting there talking about OpenGL and Digital Angel in our chat room saying she's craving mustard. I'm not entirely sure
how... Her brain works in strange ways, Dave. strange ways.
While we've got Denny on the phone, because we've only got Denny for a short period of time tonight, because he's going to go off and play more games, I'm sure. does the chat room have any questions about this? Give them a few seconds because there is a delay, and see if not sea monkeys though. We're actually talking
about like real questions.
DirectX 11 while we have Denny on the phone. Popshot says I love you, Denny. and I think Digital Angel.
All right, well, I've got one, Denny. How awesome is your new video card?
Okay, do you want a direct?
I just want you to tell people out there, just sum it up for simple people, like, and I don't mean that as a mean thing, I mean people that won't understand huge words. Just describe how awesome your video card is.
Okay. The last video card I had, I was running 30 frames a second, which was the console's frame rate on, say, Bad Company 2.
Right,
and that's with max settings. Mm-hmm. Currently, I'm running at 8 times anti-aliasing, 16 times anisotropics, the same resolution, max detail at DirectX 11 at 80 frames per second.
Jesus Christ.
Let me just wipe the drool off my chin here.
That's disgusting, Denny. That's absolutely disgusting.
So you kind of feel like you're there, basically.
Yeah, it's really, really fluid. It's like when I loaded the game up for the first time, I actually had to readjust a little bit because it was too smooth. It was just kind of weird. It was really, it's crazy.
Popshot in the chat room has now basically said if he had that, he would never leave the house.
Yes, well, I'm sure it's going to be difficult to get Denny out of his now.
And if it makes Popshot feel any better, I think this is why Denny didn't make it to the studio.
He's playing Metro. It's for review purposes, I promise.
Yeah, sure
it is.
I
want to say thank you very much for joining us, Denny, and thanks for hanging on there because I know you were hanging on there for a little while before we started. We're going to move into the rest of our news, but I do want to thank you very much for taking some time to help explain this out for us a little bit.
Yeah, no worries.
And you are welcome. I want to get you into the studio. We'll have to get you on a proper tech show at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be happy to.
Excellent. All right. So thanks a lot for joining us, Denny.
Yep, no worries. It's my pleasure.
All right, and go back and enjoy Metro 2033.
Will do.
All right, bye now.
All right, see yous.
See ya. Okay, that was Denny Markovic from PALGN, and you can read his articles at PALGN. Just search for... Does he write under Frozen Cry or under... Sorry, I'm not switching because I was on the Skype. There we go. Does he write under Frozen Cry or under Denny?
I believe he's under Denny.
Denny. So if you search for Denny Markovic on PALGN, you'll be able to read some of his reviews. And Denny's also been on our Platforms podcast as well a couple of times, so you can go back and listen to his observations on that show as well. Okay, let's move on. We have one more previously as well. We're actually running a little bit behind, so we'll make this really fast. We did report a couple of weeks ago that iiNet had won their case against the Hollywood studios. This was about them saying that iiNet was responsible for what all the users were doing with the downloading, and iiNet said, no, we're not. We're like the telephone line, or we're like the power company. We're not actually responsible for what is happening out there. And they actually won the case. Well, movie studios have appealed, which was not surprising that they'd do this. But I just love, the reason why I brought this up, though, was the fact that I love the iiNet's answer to this, which was basically said, we go into this latest, this is Michael Malone, iiNet Chief Executive Officer. He says, we go into this latest legal round anticipating we will come out in an even stronger position than when we won last month. Justice Caldroy's judgment was unequivocal, and we are confident the full court will confirm his ruling and strengthen it. Mm. So I think, good on you. iiNet, keep up the good fight, because I agree with you. I don't think you are responsible for what people do on the net. You are just a service provider.
Exactly.
And it sets a very dangerous setting if we actually say that we need to start blaming the ISP for what's going on. Mm. It's a very bad precedent, and that's exactly what's happening with the internet censorship filter, which we'll come back to in a second. Mm. Let's move into news. We're going to kind of fly through this a little bit faster because the Denny call took up a bit of our time. But I just wanted to follow up a little bit on Google, and this is actually going to lead into our own issues here in this country. Google, as we reported before last week, we said they were 99.9% sure that they were leaving China. Well, they're out. Okay.
Woo.
Now, they're not actually officially out. This is where it gets a little bit messy. Apparently, what they've done is they've closed Google.cn, period. And they have actually, they're playing a different kind of game, Josh. What they've done is they've moved all of their services, the search services, back to their Hong Kong base, so Google.hk. Google.hk doesn't have the censorship that Google.cn does, because when Google took back Hong Kong, they basically kept Hong Kong a free port of call because there was a lot of businesses going on in there. China is actually now a little bit concerned about Hong Kong because there seems to be a lot of stuff going on in Hong Kong that really goes against China, the way that China deals with stuff. But at this point in time, Google has basically said, we are no longer censoring the internet, and as far as we're concerned, if you go to google.cn, you'll be redirected to google.hk. It doesn't end there, however, because even though Google is not censoring, they're now behind the Great Firewall of China. So now, if you actually go to google.cn, it puts you to google.hk, you put in a search result. If you get back anything that is objectionable to China, it just comes up page not available. Because it is now blocked by the firewall. So Google didn't actually win in this case because they're still censored, but they're not doing the censoring. So, yeah. And that was the major issue, was that they're not doing the censoring. What I did think was interesting about this whole thing, though, was that Google is actually staying in China. And it's according to this, it says that they are going to stay there with their research and their research division and so forth. And I'm assuming this means the Nexus One phone will launch in China, as they were talking about before. They don't want to lose their toehold in China, apparently, which is why they're keeping their other operations going there. They're just not doing search anymore in China. Okay. So they pulled that out. And apparently China is mad at them. Of course they are.
Really?
According to the Yahoo News, he basically said that China is now complaining bitterly, saying that they have breached a contract. Google has breached a contract with China, saying that they agreed to do all the things that China said that they were going to do, and by pulling out and affecting the financial groupings and so forth, that they are now mad at them because they're saying, you have gone against the contract that you signed with us. So it's all still very messy. And but there was one other thing that I thought was very interesting in this, which was that the White House has come out and actually talked about it now.
Oh, wow. What did they say?
Now, what I thought was interesting was that they basically said that they were very disappointed that Google and it could not reach a deal with Beijing, and that they would hoped that things would have resolved, which they didn't do. But what I did find very interesting was there was a quote from President Obama, from the administration, quote-unquote, that said they are committed to internet freedom and were opposed to censorship. Mm. While we seek to expand cooperation on issues of mutual interest with China, we will candidly and frankly address areas of disagreement. So they have basically said, yes, we are disappointed that Google couldn't get organized with this, but however, we think they were right.
Yeah, exactly. So, yes. Good on them for supporting that.
Absolutely. So that's kind of the update on Google. I've got a lot more information on it, but I just don't think we've got enough time to go into it in great detail because I'd really rather cover what's happening locally to us. Now, with all of this talk of internet censorship, one cannot ignore the fact that the Australian Internet Censorship Bill is on the table and is being discussed in Parliament. Mm-hmm. Now, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, I actually did talk about the fact that they would have to take this to an election to make this actually happen. They can discuss it all they want. Well, I was talking with my dearly beloved wife, Katie, who is very politically aware, and she actually made a very interesting observation on all this. She thinks that I might be wrong, and I will bow to her knowledge on this, but she said that if it isn't changing the Constitution, If it isn't fundamentally changing a law or a constitution, then they don't have to take it to election. Mm. It is just a policy. And as a policy, it's got to be either changing the constitution or something that has to be taken to referendum. Neither of these things would actually be addressed by the internet censorship filter. Therefore, if they pass this, we could be filtered in as soon as 3 weeks.
Wow.
So just to let everybody know out there that this is really, really a hot ticket item right now, because they're talking about it. Now, the good news on this front is that the government today, this was March 23rd, published 174 submissions that it received relating to improving the transparency and accountability measures of its internet filtering policy. Now, I actually went through and I had a read through several of these. I didn't read all 174 because a lot of them are from various small businesses, what have you. But Microsoft weighed in, Yahoo weighed in, Google weighed in. So we had the big players all come to the table, and basically they slammed the Australian government. Now, let me just have a little sampling of this. Basically, Google said, now this is reported on the Sydney Morning Herald, and the link to this article will be on the website, but Google said that implementing the mandatory filter across Australia's millions of internet users would, quote unquote, negatively impact user access speeds while filtering material from high volume sites, and I love this, while filtering material from high volume sites such as Wikipedia, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter appears not to be technologically possible, as it would have such a serious impact on internet access. So basically, Google is saying they also have a further quote where they say, we have a number of other concerns, including that filtering may give a false sense of security to parents. It could damage Australia's international reputation, and my favorite one, Google actually said, and it can be easily circumvented.
Wow.
So that was Google's damning words on all of this. Microsoft was a little bit looser. They basically said that they supported the internet censorship filter. They didn't support what was being filtered. And what they actually said was they said they demanded protection against arbitrary executive decision making. And what they mean by that is they basically said that it needs to be transparent and the list needs to be public. And they basically said that if you're going to block stuff, we need to know exactly what is being blocked, and we need.
So who said this, sir?
Microsoft.
Wow.
And they actually said we need to know what's being blocked, and we need to know right of recourse. If it is blocked, how can we get stuff unblocked? You know what I mean? So that was Microsoft. They weren't against the internet censorship filter. They're against the way it's being implemented.
Dude, yeah. But that could have some serious repercussions, considering the. Thanks, Dave.
Sorry.
Considering the amount of people that use like Microsoft and so on and so forth, this could have a real negative effect.
Well, yeah, and I say it's the same
thing.
It's
like Microsoft is a big player in this. If they turn around and say no, then like they can put a censorship filter if they want. They lose.
Well, and the thing is, if they put the censorship filter in, we've got Microsoft and Google both coming out of the woodwork saying, guys, I'm not real happy about that. Yahoo also came out and basically said Yahoo is entirely supportive of any effort to make the internet a safer place for children. Reasonable. Fair. However.
I love the howevers. I'm just adoring this bit.
It says, however, mandatory filtering of all RC material, that's refuse classification material, could block content with a strong social, political, and or educational value.
Yeah.
Yahoo actually went on to list stuff. Would you like to hear some of the stuff that
they
listed?
Yes, yes.
Yahoo actually went on to list examples of innocuous sites that could be blocked. And now we've actually seen examples of this already on that leaked ACMA blacklist from last year, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
But the examples they're citing are safe injecting and other harm minimization websites, euthanasia discussion forums, video on creating graffiti art, anti-abortion websites, gay and lesbian forums that discuss sexual experiences, explorations of the geopolitical causes of terrorism, where specific terrorist organizations and propaganda are cited as reference material. Yahoo also pointed out a recent paper that provided several examples where knee-jerk regulatory reactions to controversial content have been entirely out of step with the broader public opinion. We've seen this so often where something happens and they immediately... as an example... We had the Port Arthur massacre. Now, I'm not a big supporter of guns, but we had the Port Arthur massacre. What was the government's answer to that? Within a month, all guns were banned in Australia. That's a knee-jerk reaction. We have a woman come out, Mary Whitehouse, in the 80s, who complains about sexual violence and pornography. Because she was powerful at the time, she was English, the Australian government at the time knee-jerk reacted and banned all X-rated movies. Mm. You know, this sort of knee-jerk reaction is ridiculous, and that's what they're afraid of. They're afraid the government's going to go, we have to do something, and just throw it on the ACMI blacklist without even thinking about it.
Yeah.
And the problem is we have no right of recourse to get us out of this.
Mm.
And so I think we really we sum this up, though, when even the Australian Christian lobby has come out in these submissions and basically said they're one of the biggest supporters of the internet censorship filter, but they said inadvertently adding innocuous content to the blacklist would undermine the entire policy.
Jesus.
So even they have come out against it. So it is on the table and it is being discussed. Now, I must ask, we had Brandon McClelland on the show on Saturday, and I've just noticed that one of the submissions was by a Mark McClelland, who is an associate professor of science of sociology at University of Wollongong. I'm wondering if it's a relative, but anyway, I'll have to ask him about that. He wasn't here to ask him, but he said the filters could block access to an entire genre of niche but popular Japanese animated fiction.
Mm.
So, I mean, this thing is just insane, all right? The entire thing about the internet censorship filter is insane. Now, there's not a lot we can do at this point except keep vocal about it.
Yeah.
It's on the table. The submissions are coming in from the big players. You can write to your local members. It is a federal policy, so everyone in Australia can write. Don't write to the Prime Minister. That's pointless. As the way the Australian political system works, you have members of Parliament who are representing your area.
Hmm.
Write to your members of Parliament voicing.
We should probably look into seeing whether we can get some similar to Everyone Plays. We'll see if we can find something on the net that's kind of the sort of thing base
we should,
that we can.
Well, I know that getup.org.au has a lot of stuff about this because they've been really
remember the censor donuts.
Yes, absolutely. They've been really, really focused on this. So I would suggest you go over to getup.org.au and they have another website that they set up called Stop the Clean Feed. .org, I think it was. But anyway, from GetUp, you'll be able to find those links. Do have your voice heard. If enough people complain, these people are elected by you. Mm. If enough people complain, get up in arms about it, then something has to be done. All right, this is why we live in a democracy. All right, enough of my high horse. Because I got to say, I've got one more censorship story for you.
Wow.
And this one just killed me. This one killed me. Because in America, we haven't got it in Australia yet, and it's coming to the UK in July. We haven't got a date for Australia yet. But there is a DVD filtering program called ClearPlay. And what it basically does is it filters out sex, violence, and swearing from the movies you play on DVD. So basically...
It's literally like in like Net Nanny, but
for your DVD player. That's right. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Basically, it says subscribers to the U.S. website ClearPlay can download filters for specific films that allow parents to prevent scenes they feel are inappropriate. The subscribers can expect to pay about $1.60 a week for filters. Hundreds of movies are already on the ClearPlay system, and ClearPlay, as I say, the ClearPlay DVD players are expected to go on sale in the UK in July. I'm sorry. When it actually says that the way it actually censors it is it says it skips or mutes content based on whatever the criteria is, which could include language and nudity, of course, and blasphemy, which was my favorite one.
So blasphemy being separated from swearing.
Yeah, blasphemy, like, you know, you're taking the Lord's name in
vain. Oh, I know.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about here.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So I just find this entire thing disgusting, and I sit there and say, dudes... Get over it. Get over it. There's a rating system. Rather than filter out the content of a film that might be rated MA, don't show your kids a film that's rated MA. How's that sound for an idea? Let's not. I've got the chat room is now blaspheming all over the place. All right.
And that's why we love them.
That's right. Last news story, Josh, and then we're going to get into this computer thing.
Sure,
I had to share this. This is very short because it just made me laugh. I got to tell you, Bill Gates at the moment strikes me as a multi-billionaire who has more money than God, excuse my blasphemy, and is bored out of his skull, right? Because he left Microsoft, and now he seems to be throwing money at everything. We covered him on a story many, many months ago where he was trying to do, I don't know, flying or something.
He was trying to change, remember, he was trying to change the weather.
That's right,
he was creating a weather device, and we decided that he really was trying to take over the world.
Well, apparently he's now going to fund, and he's going into a joint venture with Japan's Toshiba. Now, excuse me, but I always thought Toshiba made fridges and televisions and stuff. But anyway, he's joining with Japan's Toshiba to team up to develop the next generation nuclear reactor.
What? What? Who let this man name reactors? They have exploding parts.
They do, and look, you know,
this isn't an operating system. This could kill millions.
I've got a little video here just to remind us that, you know, Bill Gates, really, he's never been associated with anything that
just
crashes.
Just do the thing where you kind of lean off to the side like that. Remember this.
Just plug it in. It's going to say, hey, I see you plugged in a new device, and it's going to load in the appropriate drivers. You'll notice that this scanner build... Whoa.
Oh, snap.
I love his last line.
Moving right along.
That must be why we're not shipping Windows 98.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, so that was a very, very famous public crash of Windows 98 when they were demonstrating.
Which blue-screened on a demonstration for those people that were listening.
That's right. They were basically, and I'll put the link to the YouTube video. Basically, they were plugging in this new device called a USB device, saying how every device was going to be USB, and all you had to do was plug it in and it would work. He goes, let me demonstrate with this scanner. Plugs it in, it just blue-screens out the computer with a... Gold. All right. So, all right, let's get serious for a second and say, what is this? It's called a traveling wave reactor, or TWR, and it consumes depleted uranium as the fuel. And they actually say that the current light water reactors require refueling every few years, and they have that toxic byproduct. These next generation nuclear reactors will actually go 100 years before needing refueling. And of course, there's no waste because they're already using the depleted uranium. Now, of course, my lovely analytical wife, first reaction is, if they're depleted, how are they getting power from them? But, you know, so...
Hey, look, dude, honestly, I mean, I give shit to this conversation, obviously, because...
Because
it's
Bill
hilarious.
Gates is involved.
I know. And you know what, no matter how much of a humanitarian he becomes, he will still be the devil incarnate in my eyes. At least until Steve Jobs, you know, dies and becomes resurrected as some sort of demon. But until that date... I will give him shit to the high heavens, but look, if this man really has the money, I have to give him respect in the fact that, you know, it is quite an incredible feat for him to go out and start trying to do things like a weather-changing machine. And look, I mean, you've got to give
him
credit.
He's a billionaire.
He's a billionaire. He could do the Donald Trump thing and just keep making more money. He could turn around and, you know, try and run over another company and basically take over the world that way. But at least the man's going, you know what, let's just go crazy. Let's just do something over the top. Let's just fucking, I don't know, anything. It's just amazing. I cannot believe.
Now, we were joking before about Toshiba, of course, because I must specify here that Toshiba does actually own the U.S. nuclear plant maker Westinghouse. So
yeah.
It's not as silly as it sounds, then teaming up with Toshiba.
But just to finish off, man, what I mean is, if they can actually make... an effective use of depleted uranium. I mean, that's...
I'm all for it, absolutely.
Dude, that's as good as finding a use for CRT monitors. I mean, like, if we could do that, man, we could clean up half the world's problems.
Well, according to this, it says TerraPower, which is the company that I guess has been formed by Bill Gates, lacks the know-how how to manufacture nuclear power equipment, but it has joined forces with Toshiba, which has developed, apparently, a design for an ultra-compact reactor that can operate continuously for 30 years already.
Wow.
So it really is one step until the next thing. I'm just absolutely fascinated by the concept of using depleted uranium. I think this is the thing that really fascinates me more than anything else about this story. But anyway, I do just keep Gates away from... Take his money and keep him away from it, because the man does have the kiss of death with the... I mean, let's face it, the Microsoft three-finger salute is there for a reason, all right? We don't really want to have to go, damn it, the reactor's offline, quick, reboot it. So, anyway, all right. So
well, maybe they'll try and use USB 3 for it, and the world will end.
Oh, dear God. All right, let's talk computers, Josh. The reason why we're going to talk about desktops, because we actually weren't originally going to go into the desktop market, but a survey came out this week. San Francisco MPD Group has reported that some sales of desktop computers soared 30% in February, basically defying any talk that they were being made obsolete by laptops, because suddenly we had this soar. And this is on top of the fact that the dollar value has actually climbed by 33%, which means they're actually more expensive than they were initially. So,
yeah, I will field that question a bit and explain that. During the January-February part, we did have a huge, like, I mean, basically since probably late December, we have had an incredible push towards getting out and moving out desktops. So that may actually be because all of these desktop machines are now being powerhoused out of the stores, like at $200, $300. Mm. Like they're just trying to get them clear so that they can get in a few new models and focus on laptops. Like in most stores now, you will find a small section of desktops and three or four aisles worth of laptops, because that's the way we go.
As a consumer device, I can almost see that. But there is still a, I mean, let's face it, Denny, who was on the show just before,
will never get a laptop to a computer.
No, that's right, because of what he is using it for. Mm. And there is a limited upgrade path to the laptop and so forth, as we discussed last week. So there is reason for a desktop. If you have a processor intensive application that you require to use. Now, that doesn't mean games. It could be video editing. It could be
3D animation.
3D animation, even photo. And if you are an avid photographer, a laptop is great to have out on the field. But let's face it, when you want to get to some serious serious pixel pushing, you need raw grunt behind that. You're talking about OpenGL processors. You're talking about GPUs and CPUs. You're talking about lots of RAM. I mean, lots and lots of RAM. So there is place for it. This MPD group also went on to say that they actually felt that it wasn't just Microsoft Windows, because one analyst group said Windows 7 was behind a lot of this push. They actually said that Macintosh desktop machines, which would be the iMac and the Mac Pro, both had booming sales in the month of February.
Mac, like iMac Macs are just going insane at the moment. Like, we cannot keep them in store. It is so hard not to have to custom build or order in advance for Macs, because it's just they just fly out quicker than almost anything else we sell.
Yeah, so and they're saying that it's amazing, because Apple has actually had a lackluster couple of quarters. I mean, they've been doing it right. They've been great phone sales and stuff, but the Mac sales have actually been down. And they're saying that this has been an amazing quarter for Apple. They've been absolutely going crazy. They're saying this decade is off to a booming start with computers. What are you giggling about over there? I can see the
smile. No. I was giggling at your comment. Nothing more.
Fair enough. All right. So with all that, we thought, okay, we'll cover desktops as well, because there is still a market out there. And we thought, if you are going to go to the desktop market. Now, see, traditionally, going back even a couple of years ago, desktops were by far cheaper than the laptop equivalent.
Oh, yeah.
And now that's not so much the case. I mean, I was in a retail store the other day. You've probably got the same thing. I think there was a compact computer that after cashback, because they were offering cashbacks on them, after cashback, the compact came out to like $500 or something like that. And you sit there, this is a 15-inch laptop. And you sit there and go, wow, that is remarkable. The price that, I mean, you couldn't get a laptop for under $1,500 a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And now it's gone to this berserker cheap prices. So price isn't actually the issue anymore.
No, but desktops as a whole have kind of changed from the way that they used to be. Like, we have so many different types of desktops now. Again, funnily enough, like last night, you can really break them down into three major styles of desktop computer. One is your traditional case and monitor
the
beige box. Honestly, though, it's more black box now. You have to go black box, because no one really has the beige ones anymore.
Mine's white.
Yeah, exactly. It's the beige is gone. No one likes beige anymore. Beige was so, 1990.
Yeah. we sound like Sex in the City here.
Yes, exactly. More importantly, Dave, you've still got those ones, and they still serve a definite purpose for people like hardcore gamers, people that do need huge amounts of grunt in their machines, like ridiculous levels of grunt. for whatever it may be, editing, you know, software, or just people that run computers at heavy things. Like, I know people that will buy up these cheap computers and then overclock them through the roof and will then stabilize them using cooling systems and so on and so forth. These are still really your tech hardcore kind of computers for, you know, heavy-duty purposes, whatever it may be. But then you're getting, and this started a while back, but really we're starting to see a major push on them now, which is kind of your half-size desktop machines, where you only have a box which is sort of, you know...
The little mini towers.
Exactly. Yeah. And great in theory, great for, you know, the average person that still wants something desk-driven. They still want to have to sit down. I actually know a lot of writers that as a second computer will have a desktop machine so that when they have to sit down, they have to sit in front of it and they have to focus, as opposed to a laptop where you can try and do it on the couch and then get lost in TV.
I find my focus
more productive
when I'm working in front of this machine.
When you're still sitting at a desk doing things, you really still do get that kind of a purpose. And these machines are brilliant for that. They usually are relatively high spec. The prices are around about the same. The disadvantage to them over the big size laptops is that cards are usually less effective than their larger equivalents. And then on top of that, changing things inside the machine, bar RAM, is usually a pain in the neck.
Well, yeah, and it's like the iMac machines. I mean, if you get these iMacs are beautiful, they're huge, they're 24-inch widescreen screens. The hardware that is actually inside the iMac is actually almost identical to the MacBook Pro.
Oh, yeah.
It is basically a laptop in a huge case, but with a bigger cooling fan and, you know, bigger speakers and what have you. So when you're getting down to those micro machines, you're really not getting anything more than your laptop anyway.
Yeah.
So at that point, you're just looking at it because it's a bigger screen, because it's fixed at a desk, and so forth. Mm. The third category?
The third category, funnily enough, is exactly what you're talking about now, which is the idea of the all-in-one machines, which is basically the concept that people still want the desk-mounted machine. They still want something that is right there in front of them. It still is something that sits there and doesn't go away with them. And it's kind of the concept, like, I mean, Mac really were the first ones to do it properly with the iMacs.
Yeah.
Because the iMac is a totally different machine compared to some of the things. It still runs equally as hot as any of the other ones.
Yes.
Like, they do. They're ridiculously heated machines.
Yep.
Like, you could cook an egg on those things. But internal hardware driven, like, I mean, the screen itself is beautiful. You can attest to that. You have one.
Looking at it right now.
Exactly. And the ports on the back have enough, you know, flexibility. Yeah. There are enough ports to allow you. There's really, bar RAM, no real sort of upgrade possibilities.
No, that's absolutely true. You can, there are tutorials online which will actually tell you how to crack the case without damaging it, but to get and replace the hard drive.
Mm.
But it's a long and convoluted process, and it voids warranties and all sorts of other
things. Yeah, exactly. And this is really what the disadvantage to this machine is the fact that once you buy it, it's basically you are buying a desk laptop.
Yeah.
You're buying a machine which, if it breaks down, you lose everything. There's no replacing the RAM on it. Well, actually, sorry, that one is the one you could do.
Yeah.
But, like, there's no replacing the processor or changing
the
motherboard.
Can't change the graphics card up.
Exactly. Once you have the machine, if it breaks down, you have to send the whole thing away. And, look, I mean, I know people that argue backwards and forwards, but I did say to a customer recently, because he's like, I'm never getting one of these machines, because he was looking at other companies are now trying to do it as well. There are Dells, there are HPs that are really bringing out these desktop styles
as
well.
Sony's
got one as well. And they were trying to say, you know, oh, you know, why would I buy something like that if it breaks? You know, like, I can't get it replaced. I'm like, are you really that tech confident to pull open a computer and you know exactly what's wrong with it? I do understand what people mean, but the difference between sending the box away.
When you get to that sort of argument, you also look at it and say, if you bought yourself a plasma TV with a digital tuner in it, the one thing that breaks faster than anything on one of the modern TVs is the digital tuner. They're really, really delicate. Mm. And if your digital tuner goes on your lovely plasma screen TV, off the whole thing goes, you know? So it's kind of the same situation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And look, between the three of them, they really do have these three majorly separate kind of tasks. You know, like, I mean, the all-in-ones and the mini PCs come to the same end, but at the same time, a lot of people will kind of get a high-end mini PC and run two or three laptops off it because they can wedge the machine behind two or three screens, you know, and just let it go. And, I mean, that is fantastic. And, I mean, we were talking to Denny before, and you really start to see sort of the level that you can push one of the big PCs when Denny starts talking about the fact that he's going to have three computer monitors running in what we call an Infinity setup, where the game will actually be running with all three screens on the same game, and so basically combining them to create one monitor.
What was he saying his resolution was?
5,000
pixels.
5,000, that is just insane.
Now, look, let's face it, on your average 19-inch monitor right now, you're probably running about 1,900, roughly.
Yeah, 1,900 by, what is it, 1,366 something like that?
Anyway, well, whatever. I mean, every monitor is slightly different as well. But...
And also your video cards and so on and so forth. But really what it comes down to with those ones is the average person doesn't care. They'll just run it at whatever resolution it boots up in the first time they kick it off. It's like, unless you have your quote-unquote IT Eddy, and I stole that from Shay from my work, and I have to give him credit for that, but the IT Eddy that you will have around you, unless you get that guy to come through, breeze through, and, you know, fix your computer up for the first time, a lot of people will just leave it like that. And that's why a lot of people are happy using the mini PC or the other one. And like, really, I mean, this will contradict everything I usually say, but seriously, if you are considering a desktop and you're not heavily into particular programs that you use on a regular basis, I do advise people to get an iMac. It's as simple as that. It is a brilliant machine. It works really well, and as long as you get the Apple Care on it, you will have no problems.
Yeah, and I do recommend Apple Care with the Apple product. Now, I am not an extended warranty guy, and I'll just say this straight off the bat. I actually don't like extended warranties. I think they're a money grab. But with the Apple warranty, I actually do recommend it, because Apple product is so expensive, ridiculously so, that my laptop actually lost its DVD drive. It actually broke its DVD drive, and I took it into the Genius Bar. It was under warranty still at that point. It didn't have extended warranty, but it did have warranty. And he said, yeah, we'll fix that for you. It was like 3 days before the warranty was up. He goes, I do recommend you get the Apple Care warranty. He goes, you can buy it anytime up until the initial warranty finishes.
Expires,
He says, I do recommend it, because the super drive that we're about to put into your machine is an $800 component.
Yeah.
And he sit there and go, $800 for a DVD drive.
And it's like $400 at standard cost. Well, and if you're buying a laptop,
and you can buy a PC equivalent for about $80. You know, so it's like you sit there and go, they're way overinflated on their prices. And so the Apple Care warranty does actually pay off in that situation.
But at the same time, the fact that there is just so much less, like, I mean, we rag on the fact that Macs can't be changed very much, but it is just so simple. There is nothing sticking out. There is no componentry that can be pulled off or ripped.
No room on the desk.
Exactly.
You know? It sits off in the corner. I love the iMac. I think it's fabulous. However, I also have a PC sitting here, which is also my baby, and I've had for a long time, and I keep rebuilding it, because that's what I do. And I'm actually a big supporter of the white box. I'm a big supporter of the custom-built machine, because I look at it and go, a machine should be built to what you need it to do. And a lot of the off-the-shelf systems, HP, Dell, and so forth, will either be underpowered or overpowered, depending. And you look at them and you go, what do you need to do with this machine? And this is really what it comes down to. A couple of things you really want to look for when buying a desktop machine. You really want to look into these in a laptop as well, but sometimes you don't have a choice.
No, dude, seriously, I do not advise custom-built laptops.
No, I wasn't looking at talking about custom-built. I was talking about specifications.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Things like, does the computer have, if you're going to be doing video editing or photo pushing or pixel pushing, as we would say, or gaming, make sure the computer has a dedicated graphics card.
Oh, yeah.
Something that actually has its own onboard RAM. Because what they won't explain to you a lot of the time when you're actually buying a computer is they'll say, yeah, it comes with 2 gigs of RAM, and it's got a 512 meg graphics card. What they haven't explained to you is it's actually shared memory.
Oh, yeah.
So you don't actually have 2 gigs of RAM. You've got 1.5 gigs of RAM, because the other half a gig of RAM is off on the graphics card.
You really have to pick your salesman.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, I'm not trying to harp, and yes, I know that I am part of this industry and I'm not trying to upsell myself, but you really do have to pick your salesman. When you go in, the greasy guy that talks fast is not the one to talk to.
No.
Look for the guy that's sitting in the corner that really...
And wants to chat.
Yeah. And will just... If they're talking too fast for you specs-wise, slow them down, because I know a lot of these guys, and they love talking their industry and they love talking about their things. But the good ones, when you get to them, They're not trying to sell you a computer. They're just trying to make sure that you're getting what you want. And it's very difficult to pick these. This is one of the advantages if you have a good friend that knows computers. And you have to be freaking so careful when you do that. And I implore people to still check with someone that knows, someone that works behind a desk
and
in computers.
You have to make sure that your friend is buying you a computer
and not
themselves.
Yes, I have had so many fights with the IT eddies that will come in with customers that will say exactly what they want and basically make it out that I'm trying to rip someone off, and I'm just sitting there going, your knowledge of computers extends to what you want in a gaming device.
Yeah.
And that's it. And look, it can get really upsetting at times for customers that have two people of opposite ends bickering. If you can get a good person, somebody that works in IT, and respect the fact that their knowledge is not free, because 90% of the time these people will be disgruntled like me and Dave that don't particularly want to help you out buying a computer because it doesn't benefit us in any way or form. But if you find these people, sit down with them and just get them to write you a list of parts. And if you take it in and buy those parts or go into a computer store and get a computer custom built, you can literally find that what you could pull for $1,300, $1,400, you can pick up. We built Shane's PC, which is top of the line as today. If I went into a store and bought it, I would be looking about $2,500 to $3,000. We put it together, box, machine, every part. We did it for $600.
Fantastic.
$600. So like, you can halve your price if you can find somebody with decent knowledge that's willing, and I do say willing, willing to help you,
now,
not just being nice.
I will stress right now that it is actually not actually that hard to build your own computer.
No.
But I do not recommend, unless you know a little bit about what is actually needed in there, I don't recommend you go sticking your fingers inside the case.
I just say don't.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, I've been working this industry for a while. Do not just say, I can do this, because each one of those parts does have a parts warranty. But if it's hurt by static, if you've put it in the wrong way, if something's
broken
off... If
you crack a board...
Yep, you will be buying that part again, and that is not worth the effort of taking it to a computer store. We took it to a computer store on the way home, because we were still unsure. Shane wanted to get it built by a guy, and we took it in. The guy was willing to do it for $70 to put the whole computer together. We brought him the parts, and he said, I'll do it, and the only reason we didn't is because we didn't actually have the money on us, and he was closing in 5 minutes. And we didn't want to wait, so we took it home and built it ourselves.
And look, quite frankly, I mean, I actually remember the thrill of putting together my first computer, and I remember the terror I had of turning the power on for the first time.
Oh, my God. I remember the first time I put a computer together, and all I had missed was one wire. One wire I hadn't plugged in, and I pressed that button, and all it did was that screaming PC soundboard sound of just I'm just like, oh my God, I broke everything.
This is a launch.
And then I'm like, oh wait, no, click.
I actually had a friend who built a computer in Melbourne, and I actually to this day still don't know how he did it, but he built his own computer and he set the thing on fire. He actually set the hard drive on fire.
Oh yes, and I
don't understand how he did it.
That's quite impressive. I had a friend that blew up a sound card. That was
I'm blowing a sound card. I haven't blown
No. I mean blowing up.
Oh, that's
like
good.
Like sitting there playing, it was running through to a stereo system and it actually went pop and we were like, oh, that was interesting, and then smoke started to come out the side of the case and it just slowly
and
we're
that,
like,
and it's that electric plasticky burning
smell. Oh yes,
smell.
It's so that it's wonderful tires style smell.
Yeah,
when you get
smell,
burnt tires.
It's a smell like nothing else. It's that electric smell, you know.
And
like,
at that stage, by the time we managed to get the computer off, fire was coming out the side of the machine. And to this day, I still have no explanations to how that happened.
Oh dear, I would say.
So basically, what we're trying to say here, I think, in the off track that we've got, is basically, it's a really good idea to find somebody
who knows
that
what
knows
they're
what they're doing. If you're going to get it put together, but it will save you a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah, look, and if you're, if you have the luxury of basically knowing somebody who can put it together for you, and you can get to some of these swap meets that are around. Now, I know Melbourne is particularly good at this. Sydney has a couple, but they're not actually great. But Melbourne has regular swap meets on the weekends, and you can get parts because they sell the OEM parts.
Yeah.
It's very cheap. You can pick up all these parts. They're all still covered by warranty and everything else. What?
No, I was saying ooh.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Oh, yeah. The swap meets are fantastic. I used to live in the swap meets every Sunday. You go down there, you can buy all the parts very, very cheap. You bring them back, and you can get somebody to assemble it for you. And that is actually the cheapest way to put... You can put together a computer for a few hundred dollars.
For anyone that is in Sydney, the two places I would advise you to hit up if you're looking at buying computer parts, number one is Capital Square, which is right in the middle
fantastic,
of the city.
Yes.
All this is cheap Asian-bought parts. There's nothing wrong with them. They're still boxed. They're still from the same
company. And it's all the name brands.
And it's all the name brands. And each store, literally, don't go into one and just buy your parts. Go in, look at the prices, and balance them out. Everything is within five steps of each other.
To explain what Capital Square is, it's like a conglomerate of little technology stores that are all competing with each other.
Yeah.
So it's like a giant computer market. And you basically just go from store to store, and you spend the first half an hour just looking.
Yeah, find the parts you want, and then if something is a ridiculously cheap price, every now and then it is worth going backwards and forwards. The other place is...
Sorry, I just noticed in the chat room, Digital Angel said she had a logic board smoke than spark because a client used nail polish remover to clean it.
Anyway, what I was going to say is the other place to go is Pitt Street. Start at one end, go into every computer store on the way with a part in mind. By the time you get to the end, I guarantee you will have saved at least $70 off the price.
And
I went in and I bought a video card for my computer. I started at one end and got to the other. By the time I got to the other end, I was $70 under the cost price I could buy it from the warehouse I was working at.
Fantastic. And the other thing, of course, is when we're talking about these swap meets, there are computer markets like that in Sydney. They're not quite as good as the Melbourne swap meets, but they do show up at University of New South Wales.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's once a month they do University of New South Wales. The same kind of idea, much smaller scale.
Yes, and the other place for uni students and non-uni students, you can still go there, is MSY. Just look them up. They have their own website, just literally msy.com. That is where I buy all my computer parts from.
Fantastic. All right. Now, if you don't want to go the white box routine and you want to go name brands,
mm-hmm.
I would say hit a retailer that actually has a good selection. Get them to demo the machines for you. Ask for advice. If you get, well, as Josh was saying before, if you get a salesman that just rattles numbers at you, there's a good chance they probably don't even know what those numbers
mean.
Come
see me.
And come and see Josh.
I'm not trying to sell. It's just I will help you.
Yeah, so Josh can help you as well. If you need, you can contact Josh through the fan page, and he can help you out as well. So that's another option as well. But I mean, a lot of the larger computer retailers will have the full lineup of your HPs, your Dells, and so forth, and your Sonys, and you can have a look at them, and you can get the feel of them, and so forth. Now, I would say
technology tip number one, just for people, anyone that is shopping for a computer, if you get confused or the salesman is far too overbearing, get them to write down on a piece of paper the computer, the model number, and the price. Go online.
Go online or go somewhere else.
No, just go online. Go online, read reviews, have a look at the computer. You can always go back and buy it. There's no reason not to buy it from that person. But the advantage of going in there is that literally by the end of this conversation, you may be absolutely confused, but when you go away and you start reading reviews and so on and so forth, they will pop up the second you type that number into Google. So very, 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 very
smart. Atomic Betty has come into our chat room. Hello, Atomic Betty.
Yeah.
And she's actually given the website address for those swap meets, which is thetechnologymarkets.com.au. And you can actually find out their locations and their times. So thank you very much for that. And she says that she's coming back to Sydney for her iPad, Josh. She bought her MacBook from Josh, so so there you go.
I have to say I can't take full credit for that, Betty, because you were like, you had already set them up. All I did was walk up and go, all right, here you go.
I set them up, you knock them down. Right? Simple as that.
Yeah.
All right, now, so yeah, as I was saying before, but the salesman, just be careful. If they're rattling lots of numbers at you, as I was saying before, they probably don't know what the... I've been to a sales... It's a morbid thing. I sometimes go into computer shops and ask for advice, even though I'm not buying a computer, because I like to see the sales pitches. And I'll never forget going into an Apple store, not one of the official Apple stores, but an Apple reseller in Sydney about, 8 years ago now. And I went in there, and XP was still relatively new on the market, and it had, you know, Video Maker and burn folders and the whole bit. And I went into them, and I said, so tell me about the new Macintoshes, because I was curious about OS X. And he goes, oh, yeah, and he starts going on this whole spiel about how it's so much better than Windows and it can do this over Windows and Windows can't do this and this. And I just looked at him, and I'm watching because I was teaching IT at the time. I just looked at him and went, you do realize that Windows can do that, it can do this, it can. And I just rattled off all of the things it can do. And he just kind of looked at me blankly. I said, you're running off a very old script. You know that, don't you? And he went, I know. And it's like, got you. So, you know, half the time these people are actually trained to just rattle a spiel. They don't necessarily understand the spiel. They're just trained to do it. If you feel like you're getting one of those people, get another salesperson. Simple as that, okay?
Yep.
You are the person spending money. They work for you.
Yep.
All right, simple as that. All right, well, I think unless there's any questions from the... Tony Betty says the sale was very painless. There you go. All right, I think if that's the... I don't think we've got anything more to add on that.
No.
I would say if you have questions, like you want some advice, send us an email just along with any feedback or anything you want. We will take offer you any advice we can give. We're at tech... what the hell's the email address? geektech@geekactually.com is our email address. Or you can leave a voicemail, 02-8011-3167. Now, I will just specify very quickly that Digital Angel in our chat room tried to leave a voicemail using the Skype account because we originally were giving out the Skype account. Apparently, and I don't know if this is supposed to work this way or not, but if I don't have my Skype on, then for some reason it won't leave a voicemail, which I think is really odd. But if you call the number, you will get the voicemail. So we're no longer giving out the Skype account because it's not working. So, but if you call Sydney number 02-8011-3167 and we are not online, you will get the voicemail and you can leave a voicemail call for us, including any questions, tips, criticisms, anything. We'll take it all. Can I also say very quickly, I'm going to do Josh's trick for a second and say we really need some feedback on iTunes. All of our shows have got really good feedback from everybody, and that feedback helps us go up the ranks to get us noticed on iTunes. And so far, after 7 episodes, we actually haven't received any feedback for Geek Action.
Shame on you guys.
So if you just shoot into iTunes, 2 seconds, just throw in some feedback on Geek Action Tech. We're trying to get up those ranks. Our numbers are actually pretty good, so I'd like to try and get some reviews in there and try and get us on the featured page. So if you've got a moment, only if you've got some time, I'm not trying to push you, but it would be really nice if you could throw a review up there for us, or even if it's just a rating. If you don't have any time, even just a rating would help. We also have one other request, if possible, which is we have a survey online. Now, this is actually not our personal survey that I was talking about before. This is the PodTrack survey. This is to try and get us matched up with possible sponsors. Now, it is about numbers and about the research that they dig up from us. So we need some magic number. They've never given us what that number is, but we need some magic number of people to take this survey. And this survey is for all the shows. So you only have to do it once for Geek Actually platforms or for Geek Actually Tech. It makes no difference. The survey is actually on our Support Us link. If you go to the website, you'll see it's the first thing. Just click on that, take the survey, and that will help match us up with some potential sponsors, and that would be really handy too. Other than that, I'm not going to plug anything else except for some of our friends because I feel like I've already been doing all the advertising. So we're just going to plug a couple of our friends here, though, which is, of course, The Real Junkies at WeekendRonan.com. Now, I plug them every week, and people asked me the other day, why do I plug them on a tech show and why do we plug them on a gaming show? Because they plug our network and every one of our shows every single show religiously.
Damn.
And I got to say, you know what? Good on you, boys, and we will always give you we will always return the favor. So they do a tequila-fueled film review show, which is just basically they're just a group of fans, and they talk about movies and drink a lot of tequila, and they're very funny. And I do say, power to you, Fox. I hope you guys get your and Rob and everybody else, of course, but I hope you guys sort out that bandwidth issue that you guys are facing at the moment. We also want to put a shout-out to Charlie, Brad, and Jesse over at the Movie Fan House. You guys rock as well.
Oh, absolutely. Awesome.
They are fantastic. They're the movie reviews by fans for fans, and they are really, really fun to listen to, and their show is getting better by the week. We also will promote very quickly PALGN's initiative to try and push through this R rating. I don't have the sheet in front of me.
Yeah, I've got the sheet in front of me. There. Basically, for everyone that is interested in the Australian gaming industry and the direction that it's going, if you haven't already, please go into your nearest game store and basically just sign a form. The difference between this and what the... discussion paper that was going through is that we're trying to push through the idea that everyone plays games, and therefore we should be trying to aim more towards getting the R18 rating for the kids, not for ourselves. And as much as I will, of course, enjoy playing R18 games, there is, of course, the part of me that knows that watching that 16-year-old gangster wannabe not being able to get his hands on a copy of GTA will actually make me very, very happy.
Yes.
But anyway, you can either do that. You can go to PALGN. PALGN will have links to the website, but the website itself is http:// www.everyoneplays.org.au.
And we actually have a post on geekactually.com. If you search for the R18 Plus, you'll find the post that actually has those links on there. We will also have a quick shout out just to two very, very quick ones. We're just going to say we want to shout out to GamePron, and that's gamepron.com, and our very, very good friend, Dotta Ray, who comes into our chat room every week. She has very, very graciously said that she will help push this show along with platforms, so good on her. Mm-hmm. And we will promote to her. And of course, more for platforms' sake, we will also say a big shout out to Oxygen, which I can never remember how to spell their goddamn website.
OXCGN.
And .com.
OXYCGN.
.com.
Something like that. .com.
Is there a .au on that? No.
No, just .com.
.com. Okay. And they're an Xbox user group, and they're a lot of fun, too. Also, we've got
our own shows.
And I'm going to bring... I've got graphics for our shows, though, Josh. That's the difference. Oh, actually, I had a graphic for Everyone Plays.
Yeah, we had it. It's gone. Goodbye.
Oh, too late. Okay. So we've got two other shows that we want to promote, of course, which is Platforms, which is our gaming podcast that goes out every Monday at 8 p.m. It is for hardcore gamers, by hardcore gamers. None of this soft, accessible stuff. it's all about the gamer. Josh, what game are you doing this week coming up?
This week we are doing God of War, which I think unanimously is definitely going to... is definitely going to be... A much more pleasant review than some of our other ones. There is so little you can be mad at this game for. It is really amazing, and I'm really looking forward to giving a unanimously positive review for a game for once. But be excited, because this is going to be a fun one.
Cool. And if I go by tradition, I'll be playing it in 2 years.
You don't even have a PlayStation, so it may be 3 or
possibly.
4.
I've just started playing Fallout 3, so I seem to always be about 2 years behind. So.
Anyway,
and of course our other show, the big granddaddy of them all, which is the Geek Actually podcast, which is on Saturdays. It's kind of our weekend geek. We do a little bit of light tech, we do a little bit of light entertainment news, and of course we review films as well. And we basically, anything else that comes to mind, if something comes up and we think it's interesting to talk about, we talk about it. So come and join us. That you can watch any of these shows live. We go out live on all of these platforms. It's 8 p.m. Mondays. Of course, Geek Actually Tech that you're listening to, if you've downloaded this on iTunes, it does go out live 8 p.m. Wednesdays. Mm. And Geek Actually Podcast goes out 12 p.m. on Saturdays. Mm. We have chat room interaction on all of these shows.
What are we doing this week?
We're doing Brothers.
Okay, cool.
The teaming up of Tobey Maguire and Jake Gyllenhaal, who I have thought since the first time I ever saw them were two people who should have played brothers, have finally been cast to play
and,
brothers.
And apparently the movie isn't bad, but we're seeing that this week. We have a guest.
Yes, we have a guest. We've got Ben O'Brien coming in.
Who's our new writer for our site as well.
Yes, he just put up a game review. What's
it? Better keep doing it.
It's not even a game review as such, more of an analysis. It's kind of an interesting, because he's talking about BioShock 2, but it's more about sequels and how game sequels need to be more like movie sequels, which I kind of agree with. But the idea of delving into actually focusing on story rather than just reworking an engine,
Yeah.
So he's interesting, and he'll be here. He also has contacts, or he works at the ABC. He works at the
ABC. Yeah, he works at ABC.
And apparently he's got a story to tell us, which I'll leave it at that at this point. But so join us on Wednesday with Ben and our review of Brothers. I think that's it. I think we're done. I don't think we have any more for this week. So I think that's our Geek Tech Show out. Josh, how can people find you on the internet?
People can find me at Facebook, at any of the fan pages. I'm always roaming around those. You can also find me at my own Facebook
if
you search for Joshua Philpott. Yeah, I know. I just roam around. I don't even exist anywhere. I don't even have a home. You can also find me at Dogmeat84, Dogmeat with a 3 instead of, so it's dog.
Instead of the E, you replace
it with
a 3.
It's a 3, 84 on PSN, because I finally got my fucking PlayStation back.
Hey, language,
I said fucking.
Oh, okay, cool.
Fucking, right. It was like, cut it off.
I'm gonna get a beeper.
I'm really hot.
Yeah, so am I. So we're gonna get ourselves
just
out
censor
here.
It, Dave. You've got the. You
I was
say,
I'm gonna put a
button.
I'm gonna put a beeper beep. On you. I think. All right, so we will stick around as usual. We'll probably stick around for a couple minutes just to chat with our chat room, but we're gonna end this show now because we're gonna get out of here. Just remember that we're the geeks, so you don't have to be, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye.